And a good morning to you. It's the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey, Austin Bechtold in for the guys. Excited to be with you today. It's a big day for Chucks around here, Limits.
Very
Chuck
big
Noel
day.
Field.
Yesterday
Chuck
was
Conco
a
yesterday.
Huge day for Chuck. Credit to you, Jason, for putting that together, getting a great day for Chuck. I had the pleasure of meeting him on Saturday at Steel City Galleries at another Chuck in Uniontown-like day. And the way that the Pirates treated him yesterday, it looked awesome from what I saw on your social feeds.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Credit to Zangrilli, Brian Warecki from the Pirates, not just me, team effort. People around Chuck, some of his friends helped out. It was so cool, man. It was so cool to see a grown man. I wrote this in a column today. Like, he's 73. It's like a six-year-old on Christmas getting to open presents. And I know you don't have kids, Limits. Maybe you will one day if you want them, whatever.
Like, I was
you'll
six
get that
one
feeling.
Day. I
you
know
were
the feeling.
Six. But I'm telling you, dude, it's better seeing your kids open something than anything. Like, their head's going to pop off. I would rather have that a million times over than get a present myself. And to see Chuck, like, that was what this was. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit off the hop. I mean, there's so much to get into Steelers-wise. We're not going to ignore that. Limits and I are going to dive into a bunch of Steelers topics and what this season means for them. I've got a theory. I don't know if I'd call it interesting, but it's certainly debatable. There's so much on today's show. That'll take us right into Off the Top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Just a rundown of what we're going to do today. Again, a little bit of my day with Chuck Conco yesterday at PNC Park. We'll talk about that. Take that into some Steelers topics and our general expectations and what we thought with Omar Khan talking yesterday, what Mike Tomlin said, and sort of where this ties back to, in my opinion, hint, hint, and some of the names that I just mentioned. A special treat at 11 o'clock, Garrett Webster is the son of Mike Webster. We're going to talk to Garrett about, it's been 20 years since Dr. Bennett Amalu's paper on CTE and studying Mike Webster's brain sort of opened the door and changed the conversation on concussions in football and contact sports in general. And I wrote a column recently on Garrett Webster and Mike Webster's wife, Pam, and we're going to talk about all that. It's going to be a fun discussion. Dan Zangrilli, of course. Dan might have been the second happiest person in PNC Park yesterday, Limits, with Chuck coming into the booth and them anchoring pregame together, and then Dan came down to the suite. It was a lot of fun. So we'll talk some Pirates with Dan and what they should do with the trade deadline. Obviously, get his thoughts on Chuck. And the Pirates are in a very interesting spot, I do believe. Just to further tease that, Noah Hiles, my colleague at the Post-Gazette, added a story about them attracting interest in O'Neal Cruz. Basically, every player on the roster right now is like some form of interesting around the trade deadline other than Paul Skeens. I want to kick it around with Limits on what they should do. What we think they will do. There's just a lot of interesting ins and outs there. And Jeff Hathorne will join us at 1:30, Odyssey Sports Director from Latrobe. As Austin said, they get started at 1:55 today. Limits, what do you think about the change in practice time? I love it. I'm like low-key really excited, proud, pleased, something. Get rid of this morning practice crap. Practice in the afternoon. Endure the heat.
For the show purposes, I think it would have been nice to be able to have practice during the day so that we can immediately react to it. But for their purposes, yeah, I do think having it more so in the heat where they're just going through the ringer. And also, I think it's more beneficial, maybe, I might be wrong, from a fan perspective also to go a little bit later in the day than to go earlier.
That's tough to get, like from the South Hills and stuff, to get out there that early. I don't know.
It's difficult. I've tried it.
Yeah.
So having it later on now, I think it's better.
All right. I'm psyched about it. From the team building perspective, I'm excited to get out there as soon as I possibly can. I'm not sure when that will be. I'm in here tomorrow as well, and then heading up to Cooperstown, actually, for the weekend. Little Dave Parker trip. I'm excited for that. Bringing the family this time. That's going to be interesting. We rented a cabin in the middle of nowhere, so I don't know how that's going to work
That'll
out for me.
That'll be fascinating.
Yeah, it will.
I plan on going to Cooperstown in a couple of weeks when I go up to Vermont for my big wiffle ball trip that you
that a boy that I wrote
about last year. Yes.
Have you ever been?
Our second
year. Have you ever been to Cooperstown?
I have not.
Oh.
This will be the first experience that I'll have at Cooperstown.
I can't. We're going to have to text and talk about this off air.
I have made it a point to go to Cooperstown on the way up because we can drive right through Cooperstown to Vermont. And when we drive back, we drive right past the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
What
so
a trip.
I'm just trying to make sure my friends are good with it, but I'm the one driving, so they might have to be good with it, and we're going to hit both museums.
Oh, man. Are you staying over in Cooperstown? Or
no.
Are you just like hitting? Okay.
We're going to hit Cooperstown for about, how long should I spend at Cooperstown? That's the main thing that I've been trying to think of. Now, Dave Parker will also be inducted by then, and I'll probably wear my Parker, Stargell, or Clemente jerseys. I'm not sure which one. Probably end up going with Clemente, but Parker right around the Hall of Fame induction weekend would make sense, too.
You can't go wrong. I would a lot of time, though, limits. I don't think you're going to want to be through that thing quickly.
Are we talking 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours?
I'd go 4 or 5.
Ooh, okay.
I'd say let's go 4.
Because you know me, I'm a baseball nerd.
Right,
and a baseball
I know.
Nut.
I would be stunned if you got through all of that in 2 hours. Stunned.
Yeah, that's what I originally had allotted. Just so that we could get up to Vermont for the welcome event for the tournament.
And there's also cool stuff outside. Like, I'm excited for this trip to go to, like, Main Street on Cooperstown. There's all kinds of shops and restaurants and stuff. Like, you should eat there. You should stop and hang out a little bit if you can. But the museum itself, man, is... It's more than 2 hours.
Yeah, maybe we should. We spent like 4 hours in Canton at the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I could see that.
The College Football Hall of Fame, my sister and I went before we went to the Peach Bowl when Penn State played Ole Miss. We probably spent 45 minutes in there. I was like, is there more? Like, is there, that is a small museum. They built it about 15 years ago and they continue to add to it, but it is not, it's like half the size of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Maybe, probably smaller than that.
Yeah. It's kind of, the NHL's kind of that way. I mean, I like the NHL Hall of Fame, don't get me wrong, but I mean, that's 2 hours. You can get that done in 2 hours. I would definitely put Cooperstown in the NFL scale of time you need to get through that thing. It is hefty. And you just don't, like, it's really well done. You don't want to rush that.
No, I don't.
You're not going to want to go anywhere.
That means we're going to have to leave even earlier.
That's all right.
On Thursday morning next week.
That's why they have coffee limits.
That I have never drank. I've never drank coffee more than like twice.
Well, you'll get there. You'll get there one day. You'll get there.
Texter, limits may have a statue made and put in the Wiffle Ball Hall of Fame. Now, what would the statue be of me? Nobody wants to see that.
I don't. Maybe by the time you're around statue territory.
They might not even put a statue of me up at our own field, let alone Cooperstown.
You're still in the middle of your career. Who gets a statue in the middle of their
That's
career?
Fair. 6 years into my career. And
it's
remember,
the
you need
statue
like a,
of limitations.
Remember, you need a seven. Very good. You need a 7 year peak, remember, to be able to reach the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Like a good 7 year window that some people say Andrew McCutchen only had 5 for, even though I think he's a borderline Hall of Famer and will end up probably getting in on a veterans committee. I need to find that 7 year peak.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer about the Pirates. And well, I know that's a broad question, but I had thought, sorry, we've gone like way sideways of what I wanted to talk about, but it's good. I thought with Kutch limits that if he came back to Pittsburgh and got the Pirates in the playoffs and turned things around again, for me, that was going to like solidify him as a Hall of Famer. I wasn't going to question that. That's so much done in an individual market for a team that has struggled over the years. And the fact that they stink, it's just, you don't have that.
Well, and I think it further elevates what he did the first time around in winning MVP in 13 and how he was able to lift that team in an organization that was bad before him and was bad once he left. And at this point, I mean, at 38, there's really nothing that he can do to be able to just say, hey, I'll put this team on my back, come follow me, just get carried, where it further elevates that three-year window that they had and the success that he ultimately had from about 2011 to 2016.
Yep. All right, let's get back on topic here, or at least get near the topic. It's been a little while. Fan Twitter is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The fan text line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. So I wanted to start off just by talking a little bit about Chuck, my day with Chuck, some insides, what happened. I wrote a column at postgazette.com, but this is a much better forum to just kind of give you a peek behind the curtain and why things went the way they did or how things went the way they did. Major shout out to M&R Transport in Uniontown who donated a van, and Gary was our driver and took us back and forth. It was not an easy drive, or M&R Transit, excuse me, not transport, but that was really cool of them, and it was fun to ride in a van. We get to Uniontown, and so I drove to Chuck's place, and I actually drove to M&R and left my car there, but we pick up Chuck yesterday morning, and immediately when we get in, Chuck just starts going. He just starts going. He's riled up, ready to talk about the Pirates. It's awesome. The whole ride there, we're talking various Pirates things. And so Chuck had called me a couple days ago to just check in, make sure we're good to go on this. And he's like, you know, I don't want to impinge. I don't want to ask for things. Like, whatever happens, you know, I'm going to be so thrilled. I'm so excited. He's like, but I'd really like to meet Jim Leland. And so I sent a text trying to get this lined up, and we didn't know if Jim was going to be at the ballpark. And I just thought this was so cool. So when we pulled in to the cul-de-sac by the Maz statue, I did a double take at first. I'm like, there's no way there's Jim Leland right there, like walking in the exact same time. Like that's fate, man. That was so cool. And so I immediately went up to Jim and said hello, and I'm like, hey, you know, Chuck is here. Can you? Oh, of course. Yeah. Jim went over, and Chuck was just blown away. And it was the first of several of those such instances. Really, really cool. So we get inside, and I'm you know, going around with Chuck, and so we take Chuck down to the batting tunnel, or, you know, outside of the Pirates clubhouse. That was kind of our plan. We're gonna hang there and see who we see, and Donnie Kelly was going to pop out, and whatever, anybody else, you know, if they didn't have something going on, they're going to stop and say hi to Chuck. So Paul Skeens goes out to throw, and I think he was going to throw. He's going to the field, and Paul, you know, Paul does this, and it's not a criticism at all. He's like got his blinders on, you know, he goes out and he's doing his thing. And Chuck was like, oh, man, I really wish Paul would have stopped. And he was like all kind of bummed about it. And Paul finishes up his day and then comes in and says hello and stops and chats with them for a little bit. And then after that moment was just one of the coolest things ever. I mean, that is like, you know, you've got your kid and the big crit that you bought him a PS5 or something, their head's about to pop off. Like, Chuck was just so blown away that Paul stopped on the way in, and he thought he missed Paul, but chatted with him for a while. That was awesome. Donnie Kelly came by, Greg Brown came by, so we're doing all that. When we go upstairs, to see Danny Zangrilli. He hops on the pregame show, and you know, we kind of didn't tell Chuck a lot about that intentionally, but I was joking with him. The Pirates gave him a credential, and we told him, like, Chuck, you're not loafing, man. Like, we're putting you to work. Danny said, this is not an off day for you, Chuck. And he's cracking up the whole time. So he immediately gets on the air, and him and Dan just cutting it up. It was so good. Impromptu, like, you know, just winging it. And Dan did a great job with him. And so we do that. Then Bob Walk stops in, Guy Junker stops in, you know, anybody who can find Chuck or sees Chuck just wanting to say hello. And then we did the play ball thing on the field. Which he was like workshopping this on the ride in. That was really funny, where I told him, like, hey, the Pirates want you to be the play ball guy. Are you okay with that? And he's like, oh yeah, of course. Thinks about it. He goes, I'm going to quote Willie Stargell. I'm going to say play ball, don't work ball. And he just keeps like kind of workshopping his speech. I was a little nervous because I know they just want you to say play ball.
That's it. They just want like 5 seconds and move past it.
Yep. I don't care. They didn't care. It was great. This guy has spent so much time on hold, spent so much time passionately caring for the Pirates. We're talking about a 73-year-old man with cerebral palsy that has about the greatest outlook on life ever. You can wait. I don't even know when first pitch was yesterday, and I frankly don't care. He's going to talk. He's going to get his words out.
As so, he should.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So we had that. And then there's a video that I tweeted, King Jemison, one of the video guys for us at the Post-Gazette. King does a lot of multimedia stuff, but he captured this. And I'm so glad he did. I tried to get my phone out. Chuck was going along the warning track up the third base line, and I didn't expect this. Maybe I should have. We're walking off the field. And, like, literally people see him and start clapping, standing, Yeah, Chuck. I've never been a part of something like that, Limits, where, like, you're in the middle of a stand. Obviously, it's not for me. I'm standing back and trying to let, you know, Chuck have his moment while also, like, helping him steer his wheelchair. But just, like, in the middle of that, that was so cool and so powerful. Pirates fans voicing their love of Chuck. It was a great time. It was a great time.
Yeah, I saw the video, and, you know, it was cool how he was kind of just waving towards them and just kind of soaking it in and looking towards the crowd. And, you know, he means a lot to this Pirates fandom, and I'm glad that he was able to get back to the ballpark for the first time in, what, 12 years?
Yeah.
First time since 13.
13. And,
you know, he's somebody who has just been such a backbone of this fan base, really at the top on the Mount Rushmore of Pirates fandom.
It really is.
And he always, as you mentioned, he always has a very positive look on life. I talked to him for about 2 hours Saturday, and he didn't say anything negative. He was telling me just about all of his life experiences, and he also is just so knowledgeable about baseball. That it's
yes.
Man, he could tell you things about the 1925 Pirates that you never even knew existed. 100 years ago, Chuck wasn't alive, obviously, and he can tell you whatever you want to know about that team. He was telling me old high school basketball notes from the 50s.
From, like, his high school?
From his high school, yes.
Guyble Catholic.
Yeah. Yep. And he was talking about their basketball team and how successful they were on multiple runs, a state championship they played against Philadelphia that they expected Guyble not even to show up for because they thought they'd get run out of the gym and ended up winning it. So
it's funny. I got the same thing.
He's
they went 26-0
yep.
in 1978.
He's a wealth of knowledge.
I think it was 1970. He really is. Like, he's just such a beautiful mind. And I mean, some of the, like, the recall that he has. Oh, it's funny. And this is the last point I'll make about this, and I'll move into some Steeler stuff. But do you know he remembers phone numbers? He's like Kramer in the alarm clock. Like, he has the internal alarm clock. So he was asking, our King Jemison was with us, and Sebastian Fultz, two Post-Gazette photographers or multimedia people, and was asking for their phone numbers because they were awesome, like helping care for Chuck and all that stuff. And I was going to write their numbers down for him. He's like, no, I'll remember it. Just tell me. He just remembers phone numbers, like remembers my number without writing it down. It's unbelievable. Chuck's recall is something else. So Chuck had a great time. There's a column, postgazette.com. Please check it out. And just an amazing day. I could talk forever about that, but we will transition over to the other Chuck Knoll Field, which will be populated by Steelers players very shortly. First official practice day in Latrobe today. I'm psyched for it, Limits. I wrote a column, not to keep referencing my columns, but about this is the most exciting, intriguing Steelers training camp of my lifetime. Of yours, can you think of one that's more?
I'm
at a loss. The only one I have is after Ben was drafted. But I think this is going to be just fascinating theater.
I think the 17 or the 16 season, when there was like a lot of realistic belief, like, sure, the defense isn't very good, but look at what we have with the Killer Bees. Look at our offensive line. Look at what's been built up with Todd Haley.
Yeah.
There were like significant Super Bowl aspirations. This is different.
But we weren't going to learn anything in camp, though.
Right. This year, obviously, more new pieces than you could have ever imagined. New quarterback. Arthur Smith with the new quarterback. There's still questions on Smith. Plus a revamped defense that no longer has Minka and has your $41 million a year pass rusher wanting to move around in the defense. So there is going to be a lot to glean from these practices. We also can't overreact to camp results.
Oh,
and
the heck we can't, Limits. Get out of here with that nonsense.
Like we did with 5-for-5 Kenny Pickett and spring training results every year for the Pirates. Remember when Henry Davis hit like 5 home runs in spring training last year?
Oh, I remember. Jack Sawinski, too.
And we all thought he was back. So those are the types of things where you can glean some things, but proceed with caution. The caution signs are up.
No.
Put the blinkers on.
No. Look, man, if we can't overreact to training camp or spring training, I'm out.
Oh, we'll overreact to some things, but when the rubber meets the road, we got to make sure that, you know, the flags are out and we're we're just putting right judgment on things as well.
All right, get out of here with the logical talk. I want to get out over my skis on some ridiculous stuff. All right, all right.
Will Howard will end up having a couple of great passes, and people will say he should be the starter.
Oh, no
or
doubt.
There'll be an interception from Corey Trice in the secondary. Oh, how can Corey Trice factor in?
He can't.
Bob and I have already joked about this. You know that if there's an interception from, like, James Pierre or something, it's going to be, oh, Charlie, do you think James Pierre has a chance to factor into the defense this year? What about Juan Thornhill? Sebastian Castro, his backup, just made a couple of plays. Should Sebastian Castro be the starter at safety, Charlie? Stuff like that.
No.
Well, that'll be fun.
No, 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 no. But all of that being said, the Steelers' busy offseason, I do think it says something fascinating about their, I don't know, hierarchy, we'll call it that. I think it says something about Mike Tomlin. I think it says something about how they see themselves. I think it says something about Omar Khan. There's a bunch of stuff that Lemons was talking about that I think is relevant to the discussion with the Steelers, and we'll get to a lot of it. I want to talk today about position battles, which ones we're excited to watch. I want to talk today about where this could go wrong, some areas that concern me regarding the Steelers. I think that's completely fair. I think you probably feel the same way. Nobody's going to look at the Steelers and think that this is fail-proof. It certainly is not. But when we look at this team, what are they trying to tell us? How do they see themselves? And when Omar Khan talks, it's not always easy to pick out what he's trying to say. He's very careful with his words. And you have to kind of pick and parse. And I thought what he said yesterday about a team that can win the Super Bowl, gearing up for the Super Bowl, like, I don't think that's what they think. Like, if you add all of this stuff up together, the moves, what Khan said, I think some of what they've been pursuing, they're trying to stave off calamity. They're trying to keep the head coach in his spot. And I think the head coach is doing that by pursuing some stuff that's outside the norm for them. And I guess what I'm saying, too, is it all comes back to Mike Tomlin. A lot of this is going to say a lot about Mike Tomlin's future. One of the things Omar said that really, I'm sorry, Steelers general manager Omar Khan. I'm going to get somebody calling in here saying that I'm biased because I did not use his full name and title. Notice I was not referring to Bob Nutting. I was referring to Omar. So Steelers general manager Omar Khan talked about a youth movement potentially on its way next year. And that makes sense. A lot of these guys were on one-year deals. If this goes poorly, bye-bye, we'll move on, as they should. If this goes well, I'm not sure the Steelers are going to be in a position where it makes a lot of sense to retain them. By paying a pass rusher $41 million a year, the Steelers have made certain choices. Okay. But those choices don't really lead to building on this in any sustainable way. The guys with multi-year commitments, I get that. They're spending a lot on their defense. I get that. But again, staving off calamity is kind of a way I would describe what they're doing. If they go another year with this, and especially if they go another year with Tomlin taking the type of swing that he has for this season, and they miss, I mean, at that point, how do you not move on? I don't understand. I mean, I'm not saying it's all going to work, but I'm saying that I can't ignore what would happen if it doesn't. 9 years without a playoff win. You've went out and made some moves that, on paper, they don't look great. A 41-year-old quarterback, going to get another cornerback in Jalen Ramsey. There's not really a clear-cut path to use him. I don't have any problem with the move. Again, I'm just saying it's not linear. You don't have this opening, plug it with that. Bring in Jonnu Smith. Okay. You need a second wide receiver. You don't need a second tight end, but you get a second tight end. A little bit odd. I also understand taking the chance. A guy had a really good year. You can get creative with his usage, all that stuff. And then it takes us to the next level of the discussion. Is the offensive coordinator the right guy? Obviously dictated by Tomlin. It all bubbles to the top. I think people, probably you'd tell me, that have run out of patience. I would say after a lackluster year, they will have run out of patience. It all comes back to one thing. And I think the most frustrated people in the city or fans of the Steelers, you're looking at it in an extremely skeptical or frustrated way. I get that. Maybe that changes with training camp and hope springs eternal and all that stuff. It does feel like the tenor around a team changes. I don't know. I'm willing to hear him out. Probably because we have no other choice at this point. And I want to see what they can do. I want to see what this means for Tomlin. And I do think it's a natural break. If this goes poorly, you reposition with a new coach next year. I don't know if I have a lot of confidence that that's what they will do. But I don't... I couldn't reason running it back again, given the consistent failures that they will have experienced. I just can't.